There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th podcast. This is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm back this week with my colleague and co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing, Rabia?
I am good. I'm happy to be back. I was overseas last week for a very brief period, but thanks for holding the ship down.
Yeah, well, last week we tried, you got back in town on Monday, and we were trying to do a very last minute scramble to do a recording to add to last week's episode. It did not work. The scheduling wasn't going to happen. But yeah. We'll pick up where we wanted to leave off last week.
Because what happened as the episode was being finalized was somebody was having a complete and utter media meltdown. And I know you were following it all day.
It was pretty unfortunate because I had stuff I really needed to do. And then it was like, where's Waldo? Like, oh, he's on CNN. Up oh, MSNBC. Up CNN.
We are talking about Sam Nunberg here, by the way. It was crazy. It was epic. Let's listen to a little bit of the audio so people can just to refresh your memory, because it feels like a long time ago. Even now, Susan's like, oh, yeah, I forgot that happened. Seems like long. Let's listen to a little bit of the crazy.
I want to walk through exactly how we got here. It started yesterday afternoon around 2:30 when Nunberg told the Washington Post he was refusing to appear before a grand jury despite a subpoena from Robert Mueller. Just 15 minutes later, he called in to MSNBC to speak to Katie Turr and explain exactly why.
What they said to me was absolutely ridiculous. They wanted every email I had with Roger Stone and with Steve Bannon. What does Bob Mueller need to see my emails when I send Roger and Steve clips and we talk about how much we hate people?
Sam, he doesn't have to tell you why. He just has to say do it. He also called the whole investigation a witch hunt. But then he seemed to contradict himself by saying he thinks Mueller might have the goods on the president.
Do you think that they have something on the president?
I think they may. What? I think that he may have done something during the election, but I don't know that.
I think they may. That doesn't sound like a witch hunt. Shortly after 3 p.m., White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, well, she fired back with this.
As we've said many times before, there was no collusion with the Trump campaign. Anything further on what his actions are, he hasn't worked at the White House, so I certainly can't speak to him or the lack of knowledge that he clearly has.
But he did work with the campaign, as did Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, Carter Page. She said no collusion. Note, she never mentioned money laundering. But Nunberg, he wasn't done. By 4 p.m., he was on CNN, doubling down on his defiance of Bob Mueller's subpoena.
I'm not cooperating a rescue.
You're not cooperating a rescue.
Yes, I'm not cooperating. You're more than happy. You want to arrest me, arrest me.
Yeah, so Nunberg is a former staffer of Trump. Now, technically, in the most untechnical senses, he left the Trump campaign back in 2015. Yes, but as was the case with basically anyone in Trump world, leaving doesn't really mean you're gone. But he did write some super racist Facebook posts that came out. And after that, I think it was August maybe even, 2015, that he got the boot. But he didn't really go anywhere. I think the next time you heard from Sam Nunberg was probably July 2016 when Trump sued him.
Yep, Trump. But hold on one second. Just so people understand like what kind of post we're talking about, he called Al Sharpton's daughter the N-word, okay? And also a post he called Barack Obama a socialist, Marxist, Islamo-fascist, Nazi appeaser. This is some majorly inflammatory stuff. Then he said, oh, I didn't actually write those posts. Okay.
Sure,
anyway,
Sam.
So Trump sues him for $10 million. Why?
Because he is not actually out of the camp. He's still part of the Trump campaign unofficially and sees all the gossip going on. And he's the one who decides to get some petty revenge by leaking the fact that Corey Lewandowski and Hope Hicks are having an affair.
He's pretty hung up on that.
Yeah, he's not a big fan of Lewandowski's. Mm. He is a big fan of Roger Stone, though.
Yeah.
So that was when he got sued, or really in arbitration. It's not clear what happened. Obviously, he didn't win or decided to back down from it. But he did stay in touch with Trump. He was in touch with Trump like through the end of the campaign, post-inauguration.
What was the basis of Trump's lawsuit? I mean, NDA. How does Trump have...
Non-disclosure agreement.
A non-disclosure agreement. Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
Like he gets from all his staffers.
How does he keep track of all his NDAs? Like, he's got to have like a Rolodex of them.
It's probably Cohen's job. Michael yeah. Cohen. But, so that's Sam Nunberg. Otherwise, he's not like particularly impressive, not particularly, mm-hmm. I mean.
He is a protege of Roger Stone.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yep. But he is mm-hmm. no Roger Stone. With all due respect, Roger Stone, who does not deserve much at all, Sam Nunberg is not Roger Stone. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a while, he gets interviewed by the FBI in connection with the Russia investigation. We don't know what he says, but he then, like I guess 2 weeks ago now, gets subpoenaed to, one, hand over documents, and two, go testify before the grand jury. And, you know, I kind of feel for him. I've been there too. Sometimes you're just like, I don't wanna. So you don't wanna, and you just don't, and you just whine about it a lot. And if he stopped whining and did it, it'd be over, but he didn't stop whining.
Yeah. No, it is a stressful situation. And to me, the guy seems like he might have some issues. Doesn't work well under stress.
That's very possibly true.
Do you think he was like under some, I mean, like I one host asked if he was drunk. Was he drunk? Was he drunk?
Yeah, he was drunk. He was totally
all
drunk.
All day. That's great. Okay.
He was day drinking and going on
so
cable.
He totally got triggered by this subpoena. And then he went on this media binge blitz, whatever, melting
down. He's like,
it'll
take 80 hours to produce all these emails. I don't want to produce all these emails. It's ridiculous. Do I have to? He's like, and he kept asking like, do you think I'll go to jail? And they're like, well, you might. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to jail.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what was interesting to me was he actually was like, you know, screw Donald Trump. You know, he screwed me over and I don't care for him. But he was very protective of Roger Stone the whole time. And I kept thinking, did Stone put him up to this? Is there a strategy here? What is happening?
I'm sure there could be like Stone telling him, whatever you do, don't talk. But of course, the conversations in the shows were like, okay, so you don't want to hurt Roger Stone. But if Roger Stone didn't do anything, then actually talking would help him, not hurt him. And then, of course, he'd go and unloop, but like, I don't want to talk. I shouldn't have to. This is absurd. Do you know how many emails I sent every day? But of course, all this drama was quickly replaced. I think that night, one of the reporters called him, and he was at dinner with his like attorney and his father. And he was like, well, I might cooperate after all.
Yeah.
Wah, wah. Yeah. Sam Nunberg does not sound like this, but like in my head, when I imagine him talking in the shows, I hear him talking in like Eeyore's voice.
I can see that. I did feel in the same way. What's his name makes my heart cringe a little bit. What's our favorite guy, dude? What's his name?
Carter Page, who Carter also Page. Went on TV that night.
Because he was like, nothing. You cannot out crazy me. I'm coming back.
Sam Nunberg did though. So Carter Page made an appearance on Hannity and was super boring and nothing happened. And you're like, wow, I guess really you are not the craziest one here.
That sucks.
And you gotta say,
I actually missed that.
I know it wasn't that interesting. But Carter Page and Sam Nunberg are similar in that they're both like former Trump staffers who are having public meltdowns, but in very different ways. Carter Page always looks like he's a man who's totally content with himself. Like,
he doesn't even need a lawyer. He's like, I don't got no lawyer.
Yeah, like for better or for worse, he seems like he thinks he's on his like his own the right path for him. Yeah. Sam Nunberg does not seem to think. He is
well,
on a path he wants
look,
to be on.
This past Friday, Sam Nunberg did appear for the grand jury and was like, I did my duty as an American, whether I like it or not. So his tune changed. 6 hours he testified.
Can I share my favorite quote of all time? Mm-hmm. So after Sam Nunberg, like one, produces all the emails that are requested, he says, after he's now compiled all the documents Mueller requested, quote, it ended up not being as onerous as I thought it would be.
You mean like doing a search in your emails, in your email bar?
After having a public meltdown on like, I think 6 different cable news shows, he's like, oh, actually it wasn't that big a deal. Oh. So what we don't know is why Mueller wanted him to testify before the grand jury. Hmm. And we still don't know. But so there was speculation beforehand that he may have just had like a couple points that Mueller wanted him to share with the grand jury, which sometimes happens. Sometimes you just have a witness that they're not that big a deal. But they know a couple things, and you want them to, like, even no one else who can, like, put that thing on the record. Mm-hmm. So people are thinking maybe that's all it was for Nunberg, because he's not, you know, he's definitely not a big fish or anything. He testified for, like...
Six hours.
Six, yeah, it went on forever. Yeah. That's a really... It means he knew something. It definitely means he was not just, like, a mm-hmm. couple questions kind of guy, and they strung it out for a while. He knew something.
Well, when he came out of it, he said something to the effect of... Oh, there's something there, meaning to the Russia stuff. He's like, but I don't think it leads back to the president. So I thought that was interesting.
It was like as he was being asked questions, so he had like a light bulb moment. He's like, oh, that's why they were always talking to the Russians.
That's why. Yeah. I don't know how he ever had a job anywhere, but anyway.
Yeah.
The grand jury stuff is never going to be, like, we'll never know what was said there, unless it's leaked, right?
We shouldn't know. If we do know, that's a problem.
Mm. Okay.
We might know, like, if there's a trial, we might know, because then the witnesses, depending on that and who testifies at trial, we might find out those transcripts. But right now, we don't have an expectation that we'll know about it. I'm sure Nunberg will tell us at some point.
That's the thing. So if he does, let's say he's like, just, you know, one night he's like, screw it, I can't keep it in anymore. And he starts calling. And that's the thing. He actually has a reputation. He's called like the, I think
he's the leaker. He's the ultimate leaker.
He is a real leaker. And he's had that reputation for a long time. So if he does that, will he be violating anything? Like, he doesn't have to take an oath, right? That he won't reveal what's said, even though they're sealed proceedings.
He shouldn't, but I mean, we'll see what he does.
Who can stop him, right?
Yeah. Hopefully he gets like, I hope he gets help, but he's obviously, his problems are separate issues from what he's chosen to do in his life.
Well, I'm glad he finally listened to his lawyer and was like, because he was like, I'm not going to testify. I'm not turning anything over.
I just imagine him like calling his attorney, like attorney doesn't answer that moment. And he's like, just FYI, I'm going to do a bunch of like cable news shows and I'm day drinking. Click. And the attorney's like, wait, call back now.
Texting, WhatsApping.
Yeah. Sam.
Well, so that happened. So Susan, I have heard always that yoga is wonderful, wonderful for your health, for your mental well-being, for your flexibility, for longevity, and all kinds of stuff. But I have hated doing yoga when I've tried it. And you know why?
Because it sucks.
Because it's not easy to do. And I don't like doing it in front of other people. When you are just starting out, especially, it's not pretty. It's not pretty.
I will say, I've probably never given yoga a fair try. My friends love it. And they've tried to drag me along a few times. And what always happens is they're there doing all the moves and stuff. And I'm sitting there flailing around like an octopus, not knowing what the hell I'm supposed to be doing. It's bad. It's ugly.
I did that too. I spent a lot of time being very self-conscious. And you know what? Now I don't have to, and you don't have to either, because Yoga Glow is an online yoga and meditation that you can do literally anywhere. They've got thousands of classes at all levels, so people like me can get started without feeling horrible.
So you're saying I can try yoga without everyone judging me?
And you won't even judge yourself.
So I can actually try yoga out.
Just don't do it in front of a mirror, maybe. But
definitely not doing that.
You should definitely try it out. I have gotten started on it, and I'm doing just a very elementary, because, you know, I don't want to push myself, don't want to hurt myself. But they've got amazing instructors like Catherine Budig, Elena Brower, and Jason Kandrill. And it's unlimited access for $18 a month.
And plus, I guess the benefit of yoga is that it's supposed to de-stress you, but just trying to go to classes and organize all that, that's stressful in itself.
Oh yeah, definitely. A lot of the battle is just getting there, you know? And this way, you just take it everywhere with you. It is so versatile. You can use it anywhere. You have a connected device, and you can catch a class. You can catch a live class. You can catch classes that are recorded.
All right, you convinced me. I will try it. I will probably not tell you how it went, but I will try it.
All right, well, let us know how it goes. And for our listeners with Yoga Glow, you can practice again in your own space, on your own time, for just $18 a month. That's actually less than one single class at a yoga studio. So get your first 2 weeks of Yoga Glow for free when you sign up on yogaglow.com/45th. That's yogaglow, GLO.com/45th, for 2 entire weeks for free. yogaglow.com/45th. On Tuesday, something crazy happened at the White House, which is that there was going to be a briefing by a group of South Koreans who were just coming in to have meetings over the North Korea threat, and also to brief McMaster and a couple other folks about, like, you know, what happened with the Olympics and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, Trump, like, swoops in, like, interrupts the meeting, pulls them into the Oval Office, and was like, I'm going to meet Kim Jong-un. Like, just makes it enough. And then they don't let this delegation leave. They're like, you're going to sit here for the next 2 hours and draft a press release, and you're going to go out and announce that.
And they announced it. The South Koreans announced it. This is everything about it was unheard of and ridiculous. My personal guess is it's never going to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, part of it would be like, where would they meet? I mean, like, that's one thing people have been debating. Like, what would be an acceptable place? Like, would he go to North Korea? I don't think Trump would do that. I think that would, to him, be like he's going to him, right? I don't think Kim Jong-un, like, really travels a whole lot. Like, I don't know how it happened. But did Huckabee say something about Oh, he was just saying that? Did she?
I
like,
try not to know about anything Huckabee says. Wait, which one? Sarah Sanders or?
Oh, sorry, Sarah Sanders. Yeah. Okay. Did she say? Because I thought maybe she, I read somewhere that she was like, yeah, it's not really. He was just saying that. But it seems like it's,
they've walked it back like some. I mean, it might happen, but it's a very confusing, ridiculous situation to be in. And people, like, there were some comments from, like, Trumpites who were like, everyone's been saying we should talk to North Korea, and now that Trump agrees to do it, everyone's all upset about it. Like, make up your mind, liberals. Like, well, yeah, they want people to, they want a dialogue with North Korea, but they want diplomats to do it.
Well, here's the thing. And, you know, those diplomats, like, our South Korean experts have been completely depleted, okay? The ambassador to Seoul, you know, the nominee dropped. The State Department's top North Korean specialist resigned. The senior Asia director at the National Security Council was put out 2 weeks ago on paternity leave. I mean, there's, Trump is it. Trump is our North Korean expert right now, okay? And that's the problem. Tillerson was not involved in this conversation, was not, I mean, State Department was not, nobody was, you know, asked about this. Nobody gave advice about this. It was literally just him breaking into a meeting saying, come on, guys, let's do this. And that was it. Japan is very scared about this. They're like, this is some bullshit. Because it could go so wrong. And I guess that's the question. What is the worst do you think that could happen here?
It doesn't go well. Trump gets embarrassed. He loses credibility. And he responds with the only way he sees left, which is warfare.
Okay. I mean, that could be bad. Now, in a best case scenario, he might go there and he might get to see a great military parade because we know he loves those. No. And so does Kim Jong-un.
Please don't, Kim Jong-un. Please don't show him any more military parades.
Oh, you know he is. I mean, of course he is. That is his thing. And Trump's going to get his own, though. You know that, right?
Yeah. So, okay. Worst case scenario is Trump, like, says it goes badly. He gets embarrassed. He says, I tried diplomacy. It didn't work. Now we're going to try, like, the bang, bang, boom, boom. Nuke warfare thing. The best case scenario is that, like, technically what Kim Jong-un may be wondering here is, there's a lot of, obviously this is going to be a really gross oversimplification of the situation here with North Korea, but he knows Trump doesn't care about human rights. Trump doesn't care about,
right,
it, like, liberalism or, like, Western notions of, like, how a country should be run.
Sure.
So it's theoretically possible that Trump could be like, dude, let's be friends. You dial back. We promise that you can torture people all you want, mm-hmm, and we don't give a shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The problem is Trump's going to be gone eventually, and they would have to... For that to work, Kim Jong-un would have to expect Trump to stay in power forever, which is not going to happen.
He wants it to happen, just like what's happening in China. I don't know what happened with the referendum, but did they remove the term limits there?
Of course they did.
They did. Okay, so now Trump is going to have term limit envy because he really, really, about a week ago said, isn't that great? Like, you know, he could be president for life, and so could I, and oh well. Well, the military parade is apparently happening this Veterans Day, which is, when is Veterans Day? And I don't even know.
They stalled as long as they could.
But they won't have tanks, unfortunately, and I'm sure he'll have a tantrum over
Thank
that,
God.
But they won't have airplanes.
DC couldn't handle it.
In what way do you think that could easily handle it?
The streets would break open. They're already practically full of potholes.
Oh, they're just crappy streets. But they're going to roll airplanes through the streets as soon as
they are? I thought they were going to be flying.
Now, I want to know, are you going to go?
No.
I might go because, you know, there'll be a protest crowd. There'll be a resist crowd. I might go for that just to hold up a sign and wear a pink hat or something. But
I hate parades in general. Like, I'm just not a fan of parades. It's
they kind of
slow traffic.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's true. But it's going to happen, apparently. I mean, because Mueller is not working fast enough, so we're going to have a stupid military parade. I think it's also making a lot of people in the service really not happy about it. But let's see. A lot of things have happened, by the way. I think there's been some legislation introduced to arm teachers, and I think we're going to kill drug dealers.
I knew this was going to happen. When the stories first started leaking out, everyone's like, oh, it's just Trump talking about shit. We don't need to worry about it. We don't need to care. It's just a thing. He's just talking.
Nope. It's real.
And of course, like, he's going to keep talking about it. And now he's actually making it public. And he went on about it in his, like, Pennsylvania stump speech.
He had another rally the other day.
So, yeah, this is a real dangerous threat. He could do it. It could happen. And he seems very gung-ho on it. And just like with school shootings, he wants to take action and be seen as getting credit for whatever fix he can find. But he wants to do it in his way. So, like, school shootings, we're going to arm the teachers. Sure, why not? Mm-hmm. For the drug epidemic, he's going to execute drug dealers.
Yeah. I mean, they're actually having serious exploratory conversations on the drug dealer execution thing. He said at this, I think, the same rally, that, you know, one drug dealer is responsible for like 5,000 deaths. I mean, he's just making stuff up. So can I ask you, though, I mean, from a legal perspective, how possible would it be to do that? I mean, does he have the executive? Isn't that has to be either has to be legislated, right?
Like federal. He could not do this by decree. It would need to get before it got implemented. It would get tested. I'm pretty dang sure the Supreme Court would hear it. But theoretically, it could be permitted. So the current situation. This is not this top of my head right now. This is not my area of the law. So forgive me if I am not 100% correct here, but I believe the current division between what you can execute for and not execute for is based on like personal crimes versus non-personal or crimes against the state. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court has held that for personal crimes, like things where you hurt someone else, the death penalty is not available for crimes that don't involve like death. So it used to be like rape could result in capital punishment. It can no longer do that. However, those holdings also stipulated that this only applies for personal crimes. For crimes against the state, like things that are offense not because they hurt someone individually, it's possible that a drug dealer could still be executed.
Well, I mean, this would be federal legislation, so it wouldn't happen on a state level unless states adopted it,
right? I'm
sure,
you know who'd be follow up? The same states that have done the wave of like work requirements for Medicaid would be right along there to implement these horrific laws.
Well, apparently the last person to be executed in the federal system was in 2003, so it's been a while.
But there have been convictions with death penalty sentences in recent years, like with the Boston bomber.
Right, you're right, yeah. But the executions haven't been carried out yet. Okay. There's news, although Trump tweeted it's not true, and he called out the New York Times. By the way, if anybody missed the rally, I thought one of the lowest points, it was such an ugly rally. He did his, this is what I would sound if I was presidential, but it would be boring, so I don't want to do that. Although, honestly, I'll take it. I listened to it. I'm like, I can work with
That's fine.
We'll do it. The other thing is he called Chuck Todd a sleepy-eyed son of a bitch, which I just thought was so... I just out of bounds. I mean, it's unbelievable that
he's always out of bounds. That's who he is.
The president does this. Yeah. So, you know, some analysts are saying, you know, this is going to be this is the campaigning Trump. And as we get closer to November and then 2020, like this is going to, he's going to always resort back to that to get people riled up and connect with his base. And so we'll see more crazy.
Yeah. This is going to sound hyperbolic, but watching that speech, I like was reminded again of a feeling I've had before. I feel like I used to like reading about World War II and Hitler. There's always part of you that wonders like, how the hell could this have happened? How the hell could a country that was otherwise roughly similar to us in like background and history and ideology takes a dark turn? I don't wonder anymore. I'm not saying that's happening here. I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but I feel like I can see how it can happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's really that far off. I mean, you know, Germany before Hitler, free press, democracy. I mean, it's you know, and the economy was strong. It wasn't like
I can see the route it would take to happen, and I don't. Yeah. I no longer feel that sense of lack of comprehension about it.
For me, and I know there's a lot of debate about this. In fact, last week when I was out of town, I was in Abu Dhabi, and I was there for an Aspen Institute conference. There was some high level folks there, like, you know, David Cameron and Sarkozy, and they're talking about, like, you know, this rise in polarization was the theme. And it was interesting to me that not once during the entire 2-day summit did anybody mention like racism as being part of this issue. Like nobody talked about that. And I thought this is really interesting. And, you know, just today they talked about it as an economic issue. And I think that's kind of bullshit,
no, but it's not.
Yeah. It's not, especially because the average Trump voter was well above the median salary in this country. And I think if you give anyhow, I have a whole theory on it, but the reason I brought it up was that, I was going to say that just today there's news coming out that in Austin, in the last 2 weeks, two different black families have gotten bomb packages on their front doors. And a 17-year-old boy died, I think today, by opening the package. Yeah. And a man died a couple of weeks ago when he did the same thing. So these elements are being, they've come back to life. And that is what's fueling this once again. So
racism is the predominant motivating factor here.
Absolutely.
I firmly believe that. And that's not just, when I say here, I don't even mean like here physically, geographically. I mean here in this moment in time across Europe, across the U.S. This is not limited to the United States by any measure. Look at Italy's recent elections.
Yeah.
There's a wave of fascism sweeping the world, and it's scary.
It's been building for a while, over a decade.
But it's definitely picking up steam.
You know what would be wonderful, though, is if all of this... the messiah of these racists, was taken down by a wonderful porn star named Stormy Daniels. Let's talk about Stormy.
Yes, let's do. Have you yet made the mistake I made when I was researching Stormy Daniels?
No, I will not do it. You know what?
Because I totally forgot that, like, you shouldn't Google that name. And I'm like, you just like, okay, I'm going to look for it. Like, I'm like, oh my God, no, look at my screen right now.
No, my kids will get on my laptop and find, like, stuff. It'll, like, populate by itself. I'm not going to do that.
Stephanie Clifford is a safer search term, just for the record.
Okay. Thanks for the heads up.
So, yeah, this is kind of an old, really old story that's come up before, but now it's very active for a bunch of reasons. Let's start at the very beginning, though. Stormy met Trump in Tahoe at a golf event in 2006. The same night that Trump, like, hit on, like, three other people, and, like, Jessica Drake, I think that's the name, another porn actress he apparently tried to pay off for sex. And then he went and, like, aggressively hit on some other women. Then apparently he got Stormy, and Stormy was like, this is an intriguing novelty, why not? So she went for it, they had an affair. It's not clear how long it lasted, but it looks like at least until 2007. Keep in mind, this is all occurring when Trump's youngest son had just been born, like, I think a month or two before. So they carry on their affair. There's, like, a lot of evidence, contemporaneous evidence from people who knew Stormy, who would hear her talking to Trump. My favorite quote was the one about how sometimes he'd call her, like, on set, and she'd put him on speaker and just, like, walk away, and he'd keep talking.
Just walk away. And he'd keep talking. So apparently they only actually slept together once.
Well, see. I mean, I'm skeptical of that, too.
You're skeptical?
Well, because there's been, like, suggestion that there was stuff that happened in L.A. Multiple times. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, I'm thinking about Melania for a second, though. My theory is that Melania probably just knows about all this and just doesn't care.
Oh, no, she cares. Oh, she cares a lot.
You think so?
Oh, look at her face and, like, look how she acts around him since this news broke. Like, she's never going with him anywhere. She's always claiming, like, scheduling issues. She is pissed. I mean, whatever the relationship is.
But do you think that being pissed is the public humiliation of everybody else knowing versus...
Well, it's probably, you know, it's obvious.
How could you think this man would be anything but? I'm not surprised at this news. I think we all expected him to do crap like
but
this.
But she still has a child with him. I mean, obviously their arrangement is a different sort, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have feelings of some, or had at some point feelings for him of some type. And combine that with the public humiliation, she ain't happy. And, you know, I'm not overly sympathetic towards her, but... That sucks.
No, I'm not. Okay.
So going from there, in 2011, Stormy started to talk about the whole thing and was going to go public with it. She even did an interview with In Touch magazine. For some reason, I'm not really totally clear on why not, it did not go public. And there was some articles at the time, but they were denied. And then we fast forward to 2016. And at some point, the earliest confirmed date is August 2016, is when a reporter talks to her about this. Someone... This reporter, I forget his name, over at Slate, has a friend tell him, you know what, who had an affair with Trump? It's Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels. You should go talk to her. So he does, and they talk, and she's talking to other outlets, too. It sounds like she talked to Fox and Good Morning America, and she was looking to sell her story, straight up. And also started talking to, through her attorney, Keith Davidson, started talking to Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney, about a settlement. So from what we know, what happened is maybe like late September... there's an agreement in theory reached that says $130,000 will be paid to Stormy. They'll both release claims against each other. Like, they'll both say we can't sue one another for whatever. And Stormy will hand over the dick pics. Let's be real. That's what they were. I mean, like, let's just say...
No, we don't want to do that.
She'll hand over a text involving conversations and images exchanged between Stormy and Trump. Use your imagination.
Lord.
But here's where things get interesting. For whatever reason, the agreement does not get sealed. Trump, via Cohen, his long-term attorney and Cooley grad, doesn't pay. For whatever reason, that $130,000 does not make its way to Stormy. And Stormy starts to think that maybe she's getting played. Maybe Trump never intends to pay her. He's just going to string her along till after the election.
He doesn't like to pay people.
He doesn't. And so she certainly suspects that's what's going on here. And... we know that in September 30th is when Michael Cohen made a LLC in Delaware called Resolution Consultants LLC. So at that point, they're contemplating a payment being made. And then October 12th comes along, and Stormy's attorney emails Cohen and is like, we good here? Like, is the settlement still going to happen? And Cohen is all, and these are emails that came out in the last week, by the way. Cohen's like, yeah, I'm good for the money, I promise. It's kind of the implication. And he blames the fact it's Yom Kippur for why he can't get the money right then. Mm. No money's get paid. Days go by. Mm-hmm. It's now October 17th. And Stormy's like, fuck this. So her attorney emails Michael Cohen and says, get the money by the end of the day or the whole deal's off. And that's where things get interesting. Because we know back in January of this year, 2018, that's when the Wall Street Journal came out with a story about how just before the election, like a week or two before, Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels, was paid $130,000 to keep her silence. And that was paid through a Delaware entity called Essential Consultants LLC that was owned by Michael Cohen.
Right.
So as this has come out, like, it's kind of in bits and pieces. At first, it was really kind of not a big deal, given that the president's accused of having a hush girl with a porn star. You think it'd be like headline news everywhere. It was just kind of another bump.
Everybody was like, oh, well.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's, you know, okay, wow, cool. And it went away. But then it kept coming back. And it came back again. And back again. And now it's really picked up steam because Stormy has new attorneys. She's ditched Keith Davidson, thank God. And she has a really, a guy who seems really great at what he's trying to do here. I'm going to get his name wrong. I think Michael Avenatti, I believe it is. And he is now advising her. And his strategy seems to be paying off in terms of getting media attention on this case and keeping it alive and making it the scandal that you get daily updates on and interest is maintained. Mm-hmm. This is going somewhere. This is definitely one. I think this will be something that goes for a while.
It grew some legs. It grew a lot of legs in the last
couple
weeks.
It has legs that will last a while yet. I don't know where it's going to go eventually, but this is a story to watch.
So Stormy is offering to give back the money so she can talk, right? And she wants to go on 60 Minutes, apparently.
They recorded the interview.
Oh, they already recorded the interview?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they already got Trump to, like, suggest he's going to sue them to stop them from airing it. Because he didn't learn from the Michael Wolff book when he threatened to sue the book and gave it a huge publicity boost.
Right.
So he's going to try it again with Stephanie Clifford. Mm. So where all this gets interesting is it goes back to something I mentioned a while back about the payments that came from the Trump campaign during this time period. And at the time, I thought it was significant, but I wasn't completely certain because there was so much we didn't know about when
it
happened
and
went down.
I think you might be the first one who figured that out. Nobody else had reported that, like, really weird coincidence.
At the time, it was more of a possible coincidence because, again, there's so much we did not know. As more facts have come out and we now know a lot more about the timing of all this, it's looking a lot less like a coincidence. So explain what happened. On October 17th, Cohen gets that email, two emails actually, from Stormy's attorney that say, pay up now, deal's off, and porn stars go on every single TV show she can be to say everything about him. We don't know why Stormy didn't call the deal off because payment was not made that day. Payment was ultimately made on the 27th, so 10 days later. But on the 17th, the day that this email goes into Michael Cohen and says, pay now or else, there are four transactions from the Trump campaign where they made disbursements of fairly large amounts of money to the Trump organization. Then a few days later, there's another one, again, to the Trump organization. And these five payments, when combined, equal $129,999.72. Which is a suspiciously similar to the amount being paid.
I mean,
to Stormy
28
Daniels.
Cents off.
And then it came out that we know from emails that were sent to Michael Cohen and Michael Cohen to Stormy's attorney on the 26th of October. That's when Cohen's bank wrote him to say the funds are in the account, presumably given they forwarded it to Stormy's attorney. The funds in question were the funds for Stormy. That means that in the exact time period when Cohen needed to get the money, from the first date he could have gotten the money, the last date when the money was already there, that's when all these transactions took place.
Right. And there's no evidence of any other transaction having happened, right? Like
No. There were. There's always transactions going on.
Okay.
Like the whole campaign, every couple of days at the minimum. So there's also, I think there's eight in total during that time period. Okay.
But I thought I read that transactions in these amounts, like they were unusually large transactions that were being paid to the Trump entities, like there was something off about them. I could be wrong.
These five in particular look suspicious for different reasons. I do have a blog post up at DFamilla too, if you want to get to the main issue here.
I got to read the blog post. Okay.
Yeah, it's more of a breakdown of the exact reasons why, what's going on with all the funds and probably gratuitous detail. But for instance, the biggest of the five transactions was for $79,000 to the Trump International Hotel Las Vegas. That was the biggest transaction to date to a Trump-owned hotel that the campaign had made. In fact, there was two payments to Las Vegas Hotel that day. There was another one for $18,000. And there's also a payment to his D.C. hotel and one to his Trump National Golf Club in Washington, D.C. And then the final payment up on the 25th was for a little over $10,000, and it was to his New York hotel. And again, that was the largest payment to the New York hotel that was ever made during the campaign. So, and I won't bore you here with it, but for various reasons, all of these transactions cannot be explained by known events. I'll give one example here, the payment that was made to the Trump D.C. Golf Club on the 17th. So there aren't many events took place at the Trump Golf Club. In fact, there's only one that I could find, and it happened on the 25th. So theoretically, this payment on the 17th could have been for this, like a prepayment for this event that Laura Trump held at the golf club a week later. Problem is, Trump never seems to ever prepay for events at his own hotels. And there are two different large item disbursements to that facility, mm-hmm. to the DC Golf Club, but only one event. So unless there's another secret event that happened, it's really hard to explain why there were two different payments made in similar amounts during this time period, one after the event, one before. So what it looks like to me could have happened here, this is why we just started looking into it. It looks like on the 17th, Cohen got very desperate. And it's possible what he did is decide the best way to get the money was to use the Trump campaign to essentially launder money through the Trump organization.
Right.
Through probably another cutout to Essential Consultants LLC and then to Stormy. Now, I can't show from the data available that's what happened here. We don't have their accounting records. We don't have their invoices. There's reason to doubt the official story or the stories that might explain it. But right now, I just don't have that kind of data, which I did. I'm really hoping that someone, either a reporter or someone in litigation with Trump, will start looking into this. But what people did after I started writing about this is I heard from a bunch of people who know how to do statistics stuff, which mm-hmm. I do not. That's not my thing.
Oh, I saw that this morning. Very cool. But go ahead.
Yeah. I don't do math. I try and avoid as much as possible. Like, accounting is one thing. That's why we're lawyers. Different. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Like, I can do accounting all day long. It's just credits and debits. But stats, I use being a lawyer as an excuse not to learn that stuff, even though I probably should. But stats people came forward, and they did their own analysis of it. And using different models, different ways of like trying to measure chance here, the various models came up with between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 80,000 odds of this being a coincidence and not being related to the Stormy payment.
That's not a coincidence.
It does not sound like a coincidence. At the very least, it should negate any sort of like presumption of innocence, not in the legal sense, but in terms of like reporting. Like, this is not something they can just deny happened. They have to give some kind of evidence here. It can't be assumed, given those odds, that there is a legit explanation. Now, there could be. Like, weird things happen. But this is a really weird one. And, like, no matter how you look at the data, it's really, really unusual to find this kind of pattern, where in the exact days in question that are needed, there are transactions that add up to the one that was being made.
So, okay, so here's the real question, though. I mean, like, let's say that's exactly what happened. Let's just say, then what? Like, what is the real implication here? I mean, like, is this the crime that will bring them down, is the question.
It's a crime. It's campaign finance violations. Right. Obviously, this would depend on exactly who knew what when. Mm-hmm. But one intriguing possibility is that this could be a really, really big problem for Michael Cohen. Now, Michael Cohen's probably one of the most loyal foot soldiers Trump has. Mm. So maybe he is loyal to the end. But maybe he's not. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's not interested in spending time in prison for, you know, his boss. He is the fixer, but if he can't fix this...
He's a longtime fixer, too. He's been around for a while.
He is, yeah. but if he decides that he is no longer interested in fixing things for Mr. Trump, mm-hmm. I can't think of a better person that they could have to turn on him. Mm-hmm. He knows where every single body is buried. Mm. So... And again, trying to show that Trump knew something, I don't know what it's possible that there's no direct paper trail here. I could see Trump doing it by phone and not actually putting his name on anything. But it really looks like Cohen's got some trouble here. And if he has criminal liability and just more than his bar license is on the line, because his bar license is definitely on the line, or it should be given what he's already admitted to. But if he has legal liability.
Who would bring charges in a case like this?
So there has been a complaint filed with the FEC. Okay. But also, it's for Mueller, because this is something that the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is recused from. It's something that happened during the campaign, which is what the recusal covered. So the scope of Mueller's investigation includes this.
Okay. Okay. Although there are questions about the scope of his investigation getting...
No, this is firmly within the scope.
Well within the scope.
Sessions can't investigate this. He is firmly accused from it. Like, he just can't.
I mean, this is not related to Russia, so...
But that's not what the scope was. The scope was to things that... Yeah, that was broader in nature.
Okay.
It included Russia, but it was not limited to Russia.
Okay. I thought it was only limited to Russia. Okay.
No. Absolutely. And it would also... It'd be Rosenstein's call, too, probably. He could... You know, he has the final call on this kind of stuff. But in terms of, like, witness flipping, if you could get Michael Cohen, and it's possible he's actually as loyal as he looks, maybe not. But if you could flip him, I mean, there's nothing left in the world to save Trump.
You know, I can't imagine somebody like Michael Cohen being okay going to prison.
That's the thing. Like, on the one hand, Michael Cohen is like, he's the Mr. Fixer.
Yeah.
But on the other, he is a very self-focused individual in all things other than Trump. So if he has a dilemma to choose between Trump and freedom...
Mm-hmm.
Because Manafort's different. Manafort probably also has, like, knows where most of the bodies are buried. But Manafort's choice is not Trump in prison. It's, like, the Russia stuff and the Russian oligarchs in prison.
Right, right.
And they're a lot scarier than Trump is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see what happens with the 60 Minutes interview, if it comes out. I mean, like, at this point, her attorney has been speaking fairly publicly. I mean, it's all out there. I just wonder what that interview could give us any further. I mean, the real information that I would want to know is, how'd you get paid? When did you get paid? Was it missing that 28 cents? But other than that, I mean, like, the salaciousness or when they had sex, when they met. Like, I just don't care about that. I just don't.
But here's why it does matter. So to back up a bit in terms of the current procedural history, what happened after these stories started coming out is Cohen made a few dumb statements where he basically accused Stormy of lying. And she was not impressed with that. Like, well, if you're going to talk about the case, I guess that means the agreement's void.
Right.
So she started talking about it a little bit. And then under the terms of the settlement agreement, this was permitted. I don't know why. I've never seen a clause like it before. It did, for a violation of the settlement, David Dennison, which was the, you know, stage name or whatever that Trump was using in the agreement, could get a ex parte. That means Stormy's not present. Like, no advance notice restraining order against her. So he did that. And this is where it gets weird. Cohen, representing Essential Consultants LLC, filed the arbitration, got the order restraining her from talking. But he's not a part of the agreement, and EC LLC is not the one that Stormy had her agreement with. So it's very questionable whether that's permissible. Very questionable. So Stormy's response was to take it to court, to real court, in the public eye. It was brilliant. So she's absolutely violating. If there's an agreement between her and Trump, which is an open question because Trump didn't sign it, apparently.
Right.
If there's an agreement, she violated it, like, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
But the question for the court, and more importantly, the question for, like, the public at large, is how we're going to react to it. If she wins, and by win, I don't mean legally, but wins in, like, telling her story and not getting, like, extremely screwed over by Trump somehow, I think that will open the floodgates, and everyone else in the world who has an NDA with him will be empowered to come forward.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, I actually didn't think that through. Yeah, I didn't think about that implication, but that is a great point. And you know what? I think if it turns out that the court finds that, no, she violated, it's a valid agreement, she violated it, and she's hit with, you know, all these expenses. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to come to her help, and the money will come. Which is, I feel like there's probably like big, some deep pockets.
Oh, apparently there already are people lining up to pay for stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's deep pockets around the country that would be like, we will pay for everybody to break their damn NDAs.
But before he gets an agreement or a judgment against her, he'd have to at least admit first that he had an agreement with her.
He had an agreement.
Which right now he's not going on record with. That's why it's such a beautiful situation. Because I think that, I mean, the legal merits are different. There's still kind of tricky stuff there. But publicly, in terms of, like, media exposure, Trump is kind of boxed in here.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, so this agreement it's clearly a form agreement. It's one Trump has used before. In fact, we know it is because one of the earlier drafts had a mistake. Instead of using the name he used with Stormy, he used a different one, David DeLucia.
Yeah.
So there's clearly at least one other of these.
Which is, by the way, a real person who's on Twitter who has just...
Oh, no, it is?
It is. Yeah, you should follow him. It's hilarious.
He's been deluged. But also the one that Stormy signed had like boilerplate language. It had language that did not apply to her, which means it was drafted for someone else. Like it had language about paternity issues and family issues and what children Trump had.
Oh my God.
And Stormy's attorney has been clear it's not about her. That was just the form they got. But that means at some point, Michael Cohen drafted a settlement agreement, a hush agreement that made sure that no one could talk about Trump's kids and what happened to him.
All right.
So yeah, I think this is really important. It's not, I mean, I don't care at all. Of course he slept with people all the time. Of course he cheated on Melania. Mm-hmm. Of course, yes, to a certain extent that was assumed. And even though Republicans are giant, horrible hypocrites who are not only hypocrites, but actually condone really atrocious sort of behavior, they're not surprised. We're not surprised.
Yeah. But they're also they're just not reacting to this. I feel like they're just totally ignoring this whole story.
That too.
It's not getting
But play. Also, a crime's a crime. And if there are campaign violations here, which it looks like there kind of had to be one way or another, that's a big deal.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the update on Stormy. Unless there's something we missed, I guess that's it for this week. Although I just feel like it's, you know, we did a quick treatment on some of the stories, like the arming the teachers and the other stuff. And there's stuff we missed, like the crazy, crazy interview with Davos, the Secretary of Education.
That happened last night. Did you watch that?
I've watched clips of it. And it was just, you know, the thing is this, what I realized was when you watch it, she seems like completely like a deer in headlights. People were making fun of her that she's so stupid, she can't react, she's doing a Sarah Palin. But I really think, I'm not saying it's an act, but if you really listen to what she's saying in it, what she's actually saying in some of the more problematic clips is not, it's not that she doesn't know anything. She is standing by basically what she's always stood by, which is, you know what, it's not about... she's only going to stand by good schools. She wants school choice. She does not give a crap. She said it over and over again. She said it's about the individuals. It's about the students, meaning if those students are crappy, like those students are not performing well, it doesn't have anything to do with the school. And so she doesn't care about those students. And those students, mostly the ones she's talking about, obviously, the ones she admitted also, no, I have never gone to the schools that are not performing well. She won't even go there. Are the students who are in schools that are, you know, in poor neighborhoods, that are impoverished, that have mold, that don't have any facilities, that, you know what I mean? And
in Baltimore, where there's no heat.
Right, there's no heat. There's like poisoned water. I mean, you can go on and on. And so these are schools she's ignoring. And so basically, she's basically saying, I just don't give a crap, because if students in those schools are failing, it's on the students. It's not about what's being provided to them. So she actually, if you get through the dumbness, like the glaze in her eyes, she's just being evil. and a reminder that she's the sister of Eric Prince,
Prince.
Yeah, the owner of Blackwater. And
Her ultimate goal is the same as Pruitt's, to destroy the agency that she heads. On that happy note. We should. And Eric Prince. There's a lot there. And Eric Prince seems to have lied not too long ago in his testimony before the House. So...
All right. We'll hopefully get a chance to do that and revisit that. All right. Well, thank you so much, Susan. It was good talking to you this week. And to our listeners, we will be back in 7 days. Have a good one.
Bye.
And then you got to read how we're like, is Trump a good speaker? She's talking about he uses a language that, you know how easy, remember I used to, how easy it is to be presidential? But you'd all be out of here right now. You'd be so bored. Because I could stand up, right? I could stand up. Yeah. I'm very presidential. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here tonight. Rick Saccone will be a great, great congressman. He will help me very much. He's a fine man. And Yang is a wonderful wife. I just want to tell you on behalf of the United States of America that we appreciate your service. We appreciate your service. And to all of the military out there, we respect you very much. Thank you. Thank you. And then you go. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. That's easy. See, that's easy. That's much easier than doing what I have to do.
But this is much more effective. Don't forget, this got us elected. If I came like a stiff, you guys wouldn't be here tonight.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.